This month's podcast comes to you with huge thanks to the Buy Me a Coffee crew of Bill, Anne, Hillary, Diana, and someone who didn't leave their name. It takes four virtual coffees to pay for the technology to send this podcast out into the world each month, six to pay for the editing program. So if you want to join the crew, then look for the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes or on the website, ourplantstories.com. And now a plant story. Welcome to Our Plant Stories. And I feel I should have a bit of a fanfare, really, because we have a first. We have a vegetable story. We have had stories featuring flowers, trees, herbs, and even plant tattoos, but we haven't had a vegetable. Of course, as with all our plant stories, there is always a little more to it than just the plant.
When you're in a situation where you have to be driven to the doctors because you can't drive, or you can't make tea because your brain can't compute what needs to be done, or you can't face going outside hardly, making something grow feels really empowering.
Kathy Slack is a cook, vegetable grower, and writer. In one of our first conversations, she told me she was passionate about vegetables, and she really is. I follow her on Substack. Her newsletter is called Tales from the Veg Patch, and her recipes are inspiring. She's published a cookbook, From the Veg Patch, which promises to make vegetables the star of the show. But her story starts in a slightly different place. What's the plant that we're going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about radishes, which are one of my favourite things to grow, one of the first thing most people grow, and you can grow them in a pot, in a windowsill, amongst your other flowers in the veg bed, in a margarine tub, if that's all you've got. But I really recommend them because they're delicious and varied and not just for salads, as we'll discover.
So we're sitting in your garden. We're sitting beside your veg beds, which look lovely. I mean, in the sense of they're big enough. So how big are they?
Oh, they're three. There's three of them and they're three different sizes, but they're roughly, when you add it all up, about 24, 25 square metres. So tiny, but perfectly formed.
How did you come to be growing radishes?
Whoa, it's a long and grisly tale. I used to work in advertising and I'd been there for more than a decade. I'd come in through the grad recruitment system like a good girl and worked my way up. And by the end, I was a global strategy director on one of the big international accounts, mostly working on food. No, the sort of things you buy in supermarkets, kind of food. And I was travelling internationally and jet-lagged all the time and stressed more often than not. And although in many ways it's incredibly lucky to have a job like that and it afforded me lots of exciting trips and lots of wonderful things, it was also the undoing of me ultimately. Over the period of about, I would say, maybe 3 or 4 months, I mean, in hindsight, it was coming for a lot longer, but about 3 or 4 months, my body and my brain just shut down. Like, it started with, I can't quite remember how to work the taps anymore in the shower as when I get up. And it's like, it was on the tip. You know when a word is on the tip of your tongue, but you can't quite remember it? It felt like that, but cognitive. Not forgetfulness, but it was different from that. And then I started getting panicky and I stopped sleeping and it all kind of escalated. And in the end, I was signed off work And it was not, it wasn't that anything particularly dramatic happened. I think often with depression and breakdowns, people expect something to be huge and significant. And, you know, you try and throw yourself in front of a bus, or you have some massive bus stop at work, or, you know, and it wasn't like that. It was just this unraveling over a period of a few months to the point that I couldn't really get out of bed. And so I was signed off work, and my wonderful mum would come pretty much every day and do a tag team with my husband as he went off to work, because it was decided I'd not be left alone. And one day, several months in to this, it took a long time, mum finally persuaded me outside, and we had some veg beds. I mean, they weren't really veg beds, really. It was just sort of a bit of soil amongst the rubble of this unattended garden that we'd bought a few years before and not had time to do anything with. And she gave me some seed packets, and I didn't think there was anything. It was just get out, just do something. And I just sat, actually, really, for the first few weeks of doing that, I just sat and looked at the soil and realised that, you know, you look at it, here we are next to it, and you look at it and you think it's lifeless. And then actually, when you look at it closely, you realise that, oh, there's a few weeds growing already, or there's a worm there, or, gosh, have you seen that, like, bug over there that's just trying to move that stick? And suddenly there's life, and nature is right here under your nose. And it was incredibly reassuring right from the get-go. And it made me feel like it might be worth sticking around till the radishes sprouted, for example, once I'd got them in the ground. And I found over the period of several months that it sort of restored me in a way that the drugs and the therapy and the acupuncture, who knew, was sort of stopping the decline, but not really making me any better. And I found that once I got close to nature, but specifically once I saw things growing that I could cook and eat and look after myself a bit with, that I found a different way of looking at the world, I suppose. And it went from there.
It's an incredibly powerful story, that. You tell it very simply now.
Yeah.
But the time for your family as well, watching it, it must have just been traumatic.
Yeah, it's not a way I would recommend to find what you want to do with your life. But in hindsight, yeah, I mean, my hand was forced. But in a way, I think it was good that it was, because otherwise I don't think I'd ever have had the guts to leave a job that was bad for me. But then, in a way, paradoxically, I suppose, I wouldn't have been able to leave that job if it hadn't paid as well as it did, because it was so stressful, if you like. So I was really fortunate that I could leave when I knew it was bad for me. And yeah, I mean, I'm truncating it, but it was messy and frightening. But then I feel like when things are that dark, and when you do feel like the sun might not rise tomorrow, seeing anything grow, let alone something grow that you can eat, is life-changing. Like a tiny, tiny little seed, like a radish seed, for example, they're so, so small that it can go from being something that tiny in the space of 4 weeks to being this, like, golf ball that's brightly coloured and full of flavour. That wasn't there 4 or 5 weeks ago. It's magic every time, and that awe, that kind of wonder, it was a drug.
And it feels like food was really important in that. So you could have had a bunch of flower seeds, but that would not have had the same impact.
That's exactly it. It's a different thing for me. It's something about self-sufficiency, even if it's just in radishes. It's something about knowing that you did it, and now it's on your plate and you're eating it. And not least because it stimulated me creatively as well, because as I'm sowing whatever it is, the lettuces or the leeks or something, I'm thinking about what I'm going to cook with them and how long it might be before I can harvest them and who we could have round by the time I was getting better. I was like, who can we have for dinner to eat these leeks? You know, and what will I cook with them? And maybe they could go with blue cheese or no, actually polenta or no, wait, I could put them in a pie, you know. And that's, it's just so stimulating for me in a way that, you know, flowers are lovely, but you pick them and put them in a vase. Yeah, the end. Sorry, flowers.
Now I know we're in New Zealand, I'm passionate about vegetables. You really are passionate about
really
vegetables.
Am, I'm sorry.
Don't apologise, I love it.
Gets a bit annoying after a while.
Had you always cooked?
Yeah. Yeah, my dad, both my parents are really good cooks in very different ways. My dad's a very instinctive cook and he can open the fridge and go, right, here are four courses from nowhere. And I'd always cooked like that with him. And my mum is incredible baker and pastry cook and follows a recipe meticulously and is really good at the sort of technical side of, so I had the sort of perfect upbringing because I had both influences and food was always a part of our family. It was kind of my dad's party trick for me as a toddler because he'd sort of present me and go, behold my two-year-old, watch her eat whatever you put in front of me. Here is a mussel, she's going to eat it. Yes, she is. Would she like some raw whatever, I don't know, like some raw fish? Yes, thank you very much. Or anchovy, yes. It was sort of, I just was delighted, greedy, excited. It was just always the place I went to for creativity with food.
So when did you start putting recipes together and move to that next phase of actually really growing with that to write the recipes?
That was once I started getting better and I'd left advertising for about a year since I'd left advertising, and I was starting to get loads of harvests, and I'm really bad at growing the right amount of food, so I had gluts of everything. And in a way, gluts are a kind of source of creativity for me because you've got to find out what you're going to do, work out what you're going to do with everything. So I started creating recipes, and because I like making stuff or like having things in one place, I started writing them and putting them on a blog just because that's kind of what I do. That's why I liked making adverts. Like everything in one place, a nice piece of creativity sometimes. And it went from there.
Do you have favourite vegetables?
Oh, people always ask me this, and I think it's like asking your favourite children. Not that I have any of those, but I imagine it's as difficult. Maybe it's not a difficult question, but I think broad beans has got to come quite high. I love broad beans.
Do you know, I used to insist that broad beans, I would eat them because we had to.
Oh, but you would like, double you have podder.
No, I just have to count them. Mum would be like, I'll have five, okay? Five, and they'd count five out, and I'd have to eat them. Oh,
I love broad beans. And also, I just think they're so, what a happy vegetable. Like, there you are, snuggled up in all that nice velvety jacket.
I like that bit. I like the jacket.
Yeah, it's just got to be such a lovely vegetable to be. But then, if you were going to come back as one, for example.
Not a radish.
Not a radish. Too fleeting a life, I think. Because you're only around for 4 or 5 weeks and then that's it. But flavour-wise, I do love beetroot. Oh, I can't get enough beetroot. All of them, really, though. I couldn't pick a favourite.
In a way, that's the thing, isn't it? What I love about gardening is you can... Something may not work one year, but that's okay, because you'll just start again the next year, try again. I love that sense of blank canvas every time, and off you go.
That's what frightens me about flower gardening, because, you know, shrubs are expensive, and if you get it wrong, like, you maybe if you prune it wrong one year, you might have totally destroyed it, or you've got to wait 3 years before you can try again. Or whereas with vegetables, you're right, it's so... You can usually just sow again straight away, and if not, it's only a few months before you can try again.
Do vegetable growers just find other vegetable growers? I mean, do you just find each other in places? You know, I just...
I think it depends what sort of veg grower you are, honestly. I think there are... I think there are growers who grow to cook, and there are growers who grow to grow. And I think that latter sort seek each other out more because there's a bit more geeking out to be done. There's lots of interest in particularly which sort of broad bean you're sowing, or they're the sort of people who plant runner beans. It's that kind of, and like their runner beans really long. And yeah, enter them in the village show and that kind of thing. And I think they seek each other out more, but also because they tend to be on allotments, I think. But there is a community to it, and I feel like there is a certain, you know, you're going to like someone if they grow vegetables as well. But it's a shorthand. You can sort of skip all the small talk because you can get right to the fundamentals of life.
If you enjoy these plant stories, then I would really appreciate you taking a moment to rate and review them on your podcast app, because it means our plant stories will get recommended to more people. I always try to set up a conversation with someone who shares the plant story passion. Talking to Kathy, I found myself remembering Lally Snow from the episode on mint in Series 1, where she talked about her book, War Gardens. A photojournalist, Lally had told me at the time that she was researching a book on allotments and it would be published in May 2024. So, here we are. It's called My Family and Other Seedlings, and it also charts her first year as an allotment owner. In her head, she has an idyllic vision of life on the allotment with three small children, harvesting carrots and radishes amongst clouds of butterflies. Though she also acknowledges, who was I kidding? I barely had enough time to shower these days, crowd-controlling various small children, making sure everyone was alive at the end of the day. So if Kathy's motivation for growing vegetables was to feed herself, what was Lally's motivation?
It's a good question. I think wanting to just have a go. It just seems to me that every time you pass a vegetable patch, it seems really easy. And when you're in a garden, flowers are so beautiful and ornamental, but it's quite easy to get distracted by them. Whereas vegetables are quite, there's something quite utilitarian about them because they literally feed you. And I think when I got the allotment, I just had this sort of vision of, I tried growing things like courgette at home, but they take a lot of space. And I thought, well, if I got an allotment, I can just go wild. Well, not literally, but actually literally with kind of experimenting. And then it was sort of all combined with having a young family. At that point, I was weaning my third child, and so wanted to kind of get organic food into him without paying the price of organic food, which is not necessarily organic. And the rise of cost of living, the cost of living crisis had just kicked in. And I live in rural Dorset, and it seemed to be kind of a no-brainer. Like, of course you're going to grow your own vegetables. You might not necessarily have a lot of time, but you've got some time, and it's not that difficult. And it isn't that difficult to grow vegetables, but you do need a bit of knowledge. Well, no, I don't. You just have a go. And that was kind of the excitement about it.
I do think that have a go approach is hugely important. And I think there's honestly a lot of nonsense talked about vegetable growing and how you have to consult all the manuals and you have to know exactly what nitrogen levels you've got in your soil and whether you've got this sort of soil or that sort of soil or what you put in it last year and it won't be the same as what you put in it this year, but you've got to do your crop rotations. And honestly, I think when you finally get over the fact that it's all rubbish, I mean, it's not rubbish, you know, if you're going to do it very particularly, then fine, but things grow just perfectly well without doing all of that. Just have a go, bung it in and see what happens. And then what happens is this sort of magical childlike joy that comes when it works.
Totally.
And you go, my goodness, I mean, that's extraordinary. This was a seed and now it's 3 kilos of tomato plant. How can that, I mean, it blows my mind every single time, not least because I sense, like you, Lally, I'm a slightly haphazard grower.
Yeah.
I'm slightly improvisational in the way I grow. And so that just adds to the sense of wonder and awe that it's worked.
Well, that was funnily enough, it must have been June or July. So it was 2 years ago when I was doing this with my son, who's now 5, at the time he was 3, rising 4, and we went into the greenhouse to look at the seedlings, and his exact words were, is this magic?
Yeah.
You couldn't believe that the, I don't know, it was something quite, you know, something that's quite fast growth, maybe a courgette or a corn or something like that with big leaves. He was, you know, mummy, is this magic? And actually, yeah, it totally is, because you're right, it is, isn't it, that you get much more instantaneous gratification with seasonal vegetable growing than you do with, I don't know, lupins that get eaten by slugs like almost instantly, or roses who get, all my roses are covered in some kind of fungus, no idea what, can't bother to check.
I so agree. And it's somehow like with plants and herbaceous plants and shrubs and trees and things, like the stakes are so much higher. I feel like if you get it wrong, A, it's more complicated, and B, if you get it wrong, there's more to lose. Whereas with a radish, you know, just sow it again, it's really fine. At worst, you might have to wait until next year, but you can probably do it next week.
Exactly. And the stakes are higher because, I mean, if you're like me, I buy my plants from a gardener. Therefore, you're looking at, I don't know what, £9 for a 1 litre pot or something like that, or a 2 litre pot, depending on what you're buying. With seeds, I mean, they're a couple of quid for 500 or 1,000. Or seedlings, if you're late to the game, which they're normally selling off from my local Lidl quite cheaply anyway.
Yes.
So the stakes aren't as high, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Although it is devastating when you've been growing something for months and then something bad happens to them.
Yeah, there is heartache involved, it's true.
I was going to say, it's interesting, isn't it, if you haven't got a history of vegetable growing in your family, because I sense sometimes you Lally, in the book you do talk about people who've got a background in farming around you and they just seem to know what to do. There is that sense of it feels sometimes like it's quite complicated, isn't it? It does feel like there are books, there must be videos, there must be something out there that I can teach me to do it, but really you've just got to kind of do it, really.
Well, I mean, there were hundreds of books in any bookshop about how to grow vegetables, and every year they produce more, you know, whether it's No Dig or Dig More or, I don't know, Millennial Vegetable Growing or whatever it is. And the one book, I've got it here somewhere, Your Garden Week by Week by A.G. Hellier, that Robin Lane Fox, I met at a book thing a couple of years ago, he said that's all you need for your garden, and it was written in the 30s, and it doesn't talk about vegetables solely, so it's a lot of geraniums and roses and things. And with vegetables, yeah, it isn't rocket science. And I mean, it was a Ukrainian refugee who came to our village who worked in a mine in Kharkiv. And, you know, he very kindly helped me on the allotment when I was away for a wedding, or he walked the dog when we were away for a few weeks. And he came to the allotment, and it was, he was sort of, it was like, I don't know, it was like, you know, tying his shoelaces, the way he bent down and just picked away at a few leaves that had gone yellow. And I said, oh, do you know about growing vegetables? And he looked at me as if I asked him to count up to three. It was so obvious. Yeah, of course. But interestingly, when I said, do you like gardens? He was like, no, not really. So I think in some cultures, gardens and vegetable growing are very, very different. And we seem to create this whole, it's just your garden is your garden over here, whether it's vegetables or ornamental geraniums or what have you. Whereas I think in many cultures, your garden is a place of any beauty, and vegetables aren't considered to be beautiful. But actually, I don't know, I'd love to have a garden that combines both, but I think that probably does require a bit of skill.
But also, that's so interesting that you raise that point about growing vegetables in other cultures, and those kind of, particularly the Mediterranean growers who grow vegetables as part of their cooking process. It's not gardening, it's cooking. And so that's where I guess a lot of those traditions are born from. And we don't have, I feel like our allotmenting tradition in the UK is much more about the village show and having the largest, straightest carrot and so on. And it comes from a gardening place, not a cooking place. And I think that really affects the way we think about growing vegetables, because we see it as something you need to learn to do rather than just like part of the cooking process that everyone sort of picks up eventually as they grow up.
The same day I interviewed Kathy, I bought my first packet of radish seeds, because not only did she share how to grow them, but she has a great suggestion of a way to eat them.
How to grow a radish. They only need about 3 inches of soil to grow in. So you can grow them in a window box or an ice cream tub if you only want a few of them. And you want soil about 3 inches deep and finely tilled, if that makes sense. So give it a rub around first so it's not got too many clumps in it. And then you take your radish seeds, which are super tiny, and you can do it in a couple of ways. If you are a stickler, you'll want to do it in a drill, which is just a line. I just scatter them. So scatter them roughly maybe a couple of centimetres apart, but don't worry about it too much because you can thin them out. And then pat them down onto the soil. You can cover them with a tiny dusting of very fine soil if you want, but technically they don't really even need that. But they need to be in contact with soil that is a bit damp. If your soil isn't damp when you start, when you water the soil, you want to do it from underneath. So you want to sit the tray, for example, in a tray of water so it can soak up the water from underneath, because they're such tiny seeds that if you water them from over the top, they'll just all slosh about to the edge of your window box or whatever. And then you wait. That's it.
How long?
4 or 5 weeks. If it's in a window box that's quite sheltered, you might find you need to water them maybe weekly if they don't get rain, but otherwise that's it, 4 or 5 weeks. Once they're anything above what marble size, I would suppose, gobstopper size, then you can pick them. But don't leave them too long because they can start to get quite woody, particularly if it gets hot. You can do this any time of year from about March to October, I would say. But there'll be a period when it's very hot in the height of the summer where they might just bolt straight away, which is when they send up a flowering. So they kind of get too hot and they panic and they think, I must leave a legacy. And they send up a flowering stem so that they can seed. And if that happens, then the root that you want to eat will be really woody and not very tasty. So pick them before that happens.
Any particular varieties?
Oh, this is what I love about radishes. There's so many varieties. So you can get mixes. I would avoid the mixed bags because you always end up with the white ones growing much better than the more interesting purple ones. And the white ones aren't as tasty. But they all have hilarious names like French breakfast. I have no idea why it's called French breakfast. The French don't eat them for breakfast. They don't look anything like, it's a mystery. And then there's ones like Baby Bell, and which are little pink ready ones. But then there's long purple ones and there's white ones. And then you can get into the winter radishes, which are big, much bigger, like the size of a carrot, and some of them are black and they're quite carrot shaped as well. And I mean, there's all sorts of places you can go with radishes.
What I love is when you find someone who's passionate about something. Just I now find myself wanting to go into the garden centre and look along the packets of radishes.
Yes, my work is done.
And any simple recipe, because now I'm enthused. I've only got to wait 5 weeks. I mean, mm-hmm. That is not long.
It's not long.
Okay, I've got my radishes. As I have a memory of basically radishes being the kind of thing that someone would just chop up and put in a salad. They're not that exciting. I didn't find it that exciting as a child.
Oh, dear. Well, when you've grown it yourself and the first thing you must do with the first ever radish you grow is just pluck it out of the soil, dust it off and eat it. That's your first recipe, nothing else, because it's so remarkable that you've done it. Then you can go a step further and do a radish slammer, which I love, which is like a tequila slammer, but much better for you. So fresh radish, pot of salt, pot of butter, really soft butter. Swish the radish through the butter so it's got a big dollop of butter on it, and then you dunk it in the salt and then you bite it and you get this lovely salty, fatty, and then a peppery kick at the end, and it's just delicious. Then you can move on to cooking them. I cannot recommend cooking them enough. If you roast them whole with a bit of olive oil and that for maybe 10 minutes and then drizzle just a little bit of balsamic and another 5 minutes, they'll go this beautiful rose, like baby pink. It's just a lovely colour. But then they'll also get a bit gnarly and a bit caramelised, and the flavour's much less peppery. And that's lovely with, as a warm salad, maybe with some grains and some feta over it, maybe a bit of mint and that kind of thing. They're really versatile.
I'm really loving the veg growers who grow to eat, as opposed to this is the largest radish you'll ever see.
Yeah. Won't taste of anything, but it'll win the village show. No, I'm not in that camp. No. Each to their own, but not for me.
My thanks to Kathy and Lally. And you can find details of both their books on the website, ourplantstories.com. This is an independent podcast presented and produced by me, Sally Flatman, and supported by you if you buy me a virtual coffee via the website. I promise I won't buy plants. It will go towards the podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want to show your support for this podcast via Buy Me a Coffee, then the link is in the show notes or on the website, ourplantstories.com. I promise you, your virtual coffee will go towards the podcast, not plants.